Hello, and welcome to SIPFA Speaks, the podcast for professionals in public finance. I'm Callahan Hager, and I'll be your host for today's student takeover episode. We've got a great lineup of discussions for you today, all of which focus on the future CFO. Stay tuned to hear from Darren Rodwell and Suki Binjal, but up first is SIPFA's immediate past president, Andy Hardy, who shares his views on what a CEO wants from their CFO. Now over to my colleague, Ashley, who joined him for the interview.
I'm here with SIPFA President Andy Hardy. Welcome back to the podcast, Andy.
Hi, good to see you.
Have you had the opportunity to enjoy the recent spell of good weather?
I'm pleased to say I have, yeah. I've been outdoors a bit and also been to some sporting events, which is fabulous. That's good.
Excellent. Lovely stuff. So thank you for joining us again. And this is for one of our student takeover episodes. The idea for today's episode actually comes to us from the SIPFA Student Network Communications Officer, Lauren Goff, who will be doing a couple of other interviews later on in this segment. So she was interested for our future CFOs among the SIPFA student body. What does a CEO want from their CFO, to get an understanding of that relationship from the other side? So Andy, as a CEO in the NHS, thank you very much for joining us on this subject today. As a former CFO yourself, you know what the job entails. Now as a CEO, what do you want from a CFO?
Okay, yeah, really good question. Well, it goes without saying, I think it is worth restating, of course, that it's obviously a really important relationship for a CEO, whatever sector you're in. You know, the relationship between the CEO and the CFO is a really important one, and you have to work very closely to each other and have complete trust in each other because numbers are so important, whether that be in local authorities or for me in the health service. And feeding into that is what I'm looking for is complete openness and transparency. Even if things look bad, don't think you need to hide them from me, share any kind of problem. And people often talk about no surprise culture, and that's absolutely crucial in finance. One of the things I always say a lot as a finance, you know, CFO myself, was finance is often a symptom of other issues in an organisation, and that's why I need early heads up, because I still believe that to be absolutely the case. So early heads up of any potential problems is really important, because then we can see how we can work through those. I think the role of the CFO in some ways has changed as well, and that's important in terms of the CFO. So there was a time when certainly when I was CFO, people would look towards at the end of the year, like, oh, you know, are there any rabbits you could pull out of a hat? You know, what have you got in your back pocket? And I think those days, whilst it's always useful to have some kind of rabbit out of a hat that might be needed, we should never be relying on that. So any kind of changes or things that CFOs are thinking about doing, whether that be accounting treatments, etc., tell me early, and then we can talk through what that means to the organisation. But of course, we also need some back pockets and reserves to understand if, just in case things do go a little awry. But it's really about the transparency and just being upfront and working very closely with each other. And so if there's any problems, then I can help if I can. I think the CFO, though, has got a really important role in one of those people being able to say to a chief exec and to other chief officers, but what about? You don't forget the finance. And that doesn't mean they've got to be the sort of the doomsayer around, oh, you know, it's all about money and you can't afford this. But actually, we do need to be reminded sometimes that we might all have great ideas, but a lot of great ideas cost money. And so you always have to have to prioritise. So I think that's a really important role for the finance directors. The other thing I think which is increasingly important for CFOs is within the health service sector, building relationship with non-exec directors, and in the local authority sector, building good relationships with key members, because for both NEDs and members, finance is often where people feel vulnerable, and because of, you know, understanding can be difficult, but in both areas, the CFO has a really important role in building those relationships with key NEDs, key members, to help some of those queries and overcome some of the challenges. And then last but not least, I think what's ever more important is that a CFO, of course, has that important financial responsibility, but they are also a very important corporate director and have that corporate role to play within the executive team or the chief officer team in my situation.
Okay, so following on from a lot of that, in your view as CEO, what do you think are the most and least helpful traits for a finance professional? So not just for CFOs and their relationship with the CEO, but actually for finance professionals at all stages in their career and how they relate to the top table.
I think it's really important, and it's really helpful when CFOs or anybody at the finance different levels, you say, has the ability to see the big picture and where finance and numbers sit within that big picture. Again, if I go back to my CFO days, I always used to say, you know, in the hospital setting where I spent most of my career, you know, every clinical decision is a financial decision. It has a resource implication. And so it's good that we can bring that to whatever table we're sitting around. But sometimes you do need to be able to sit back and make sure you see, well, actually, where are we trying to go as an organisation or as a team or as a department? It's really important and really helpful when finance colleagues understand the detail but can step back from the detail and help explain that. Because actually one of the least helpful things that can do is where people get lost in the detail and don't have the ability to step back. So I think that's a really important thing, that people don't get stuck in the detail. Where finance professionals are really helpful is in explaining some challenges around numbers. But of course, the important thing is to use everyday language. And one, again, that goes back to the flip side of that, is one of the least helpful things is when we all talk in acronyms, or we assume everybody knows what depreciation means, or everybody knows what accruals mean, and actually it doesn't. We need to, you know, be able to explain that in common day language, really. The ability to interpret finance and numbers and putting that into a wider conversation, I think, is one of the most helpful things that can happen. And that's where finance really comes into its own as we start to then think about big decisions, etc.
Great. So following on from some of that, how would you say that finance professionals can best add value specifically for their CEO, and what role should they be taking in decision making?
I think one of the things that accountancy training brings to all of us is a discipline and a professionalism, and having a structure around which decisions can be made. Even when decisions need to be made at speed, and we've seen that certainly in the last 18 months or so with COVID, we've had to make some incredibly quick decisions. Having a process and having governance around it is really important. I think finance professionals really bring that to the table and shouldn't be afraid to bring that discipline to the table. Whilst at one level you might think you're slowing things down, you're often not, because you get better decisions. We know with many decisions, small or large business cases, big investments, etc., numbers can often make or break a case, can make or break a decision, which way it goes. Having that key role in supporting, interpreting, and understanding, just basically understanding those numbers, is really important. But again, it comes back to also having that ability to be a corporate person or see the wider picture, and where does the numbers come in? And, you know, sometimes we make decisions where we know things, the numbers might not add up, but there's a longer term reason, or it's part of the strategic vision of an organization. But it's understanding that, because you can lose money on a decision, you just have to make it up elsewhere. So again, having that bigger picture insight is really important.
And lastly, obviously you're coming to us from the health space, so would you say that there are any qualities or traits that make for a good finance professional specifically in the health sector? Are there any quirks of the NHS that make someone particularly suited to that kind of role?
Well, I suppose it comes back to one of my earlier comments around every clinical decision is a resource for a finance decision. I think I'm always looking for finance professionals at every level who share the values of the organisations we work in, and certainly the broader values of the NHS, which are well known. I think it's remembering that at the end of every decision, there is often a patient or a population that we serve, and somebody who is constantly thinking about, well, what's best for the patient, what's best for that population, and then how can we make finances work for the individual, for that population, is really, really important.
Great. And I think that's a really great note to end on. So thank you very much for joining us today, Andy. I think our students will find those to be really helpful reflections in building their future careers.
Thank you very much.
That was Andy Hardy discussing the working relationship between CEOs and CFOs in the public sector. Now over to Allison Kroll, who recently spoke with Barking and Dagenham leader, Councillor Darren Rodwell, to discuss what council leaders would like from CFOs.
Today I'm joined by Councillor Darren Rodwell, the leader of Barking and Dagenham Council, to discuss what council leaders would like from CFOs. Thank you so much for joining us, Councillor Rodwell.
Thank you very much for having me.
Could you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your political career?
I started in politics in 2010 when I stood against the local leader of the BNP in Barking and Dagenham, who was in my ward, and I supported Margaret Hodge to beat Nick Griffin with a whole group of residents, it's fair to say. I became leader of Barking and Dagenham in 2014, and since that time, we've pretty much transformed the way the council operates, but at the same time, the role of the council with the community.
Thank you. And as a council leader, what level of importance do you ascribe to the role of finance in the running of a local authority?
So if I explain it this way, my two deputies, and I have two deputies, Councillor Ashraf Saima and Councillor Toomey Dominic. Councillor Ashraf has a portfolio that is all about community, and Councillor Toomey has a portfolio about finance. Because if we don't have the financial governance in place to allow us to manage what we can manage as an institution, then we can't help the individual. And the role of a council now is to be a facilitator of change, not the leader of change. The facilitator actually helps the empowered resident to make that change.
What would you like to see from a great CFO? How could they best help you in your role?
They have to think outside of the box today. Local government is now a very different beast than it was a decade ago. For every pound we had in 2010, we now have 35p. So we now need to think about how we can be entrepreneurial whilst within the framework of local government. So I often say that LBBD, London Borough of Barking and Dagenham, is now a PLC, and all my shareholders are the 213,000 residents that live in the borough. So the job of the financial officer is, one, of course, to make sure that we operate within the rules that government sets us, but more importantly, understands the role to be a lot more about facilitation opportunity, so a lot more entrepreneurial, whilst making sure the governance is there to make sure the risk isn't too great.
And in your view, what do you think are the most and least helpful traits for a finance professional, thinking about both CFOs and about other finance professionals at different stages in their careers?
So I think the biggest problem is when people want to play it safe all of the time. Now, again, we're in local government. Of course, it's public money. But sometimes you have to understand that to get a benefit, there will always be risk. And it's about weighing up that risk in a way that allows the governance to show that we've done the right thing. Now, that doesn't always happen in local government. So I'll give you an example. When I was talking to officers, when I first became leader, one of the parts of the council which was going was the film office. So we've got LBBD film office. And it was only a small team of two people. And basically, feature films would come in and do a bit of filming, or it'd be a TV advert, so on and so forth. Well, they were gone. It wasn't an essential part of the council. Salami slicing was the name of the game because it was safe. It was in the box. The officers come to me and said, Lisa come to me and said, look, I can make a go of this. I just need someone to believe I can and invest in the opportunity. So I asked her about what had been going on. And knowing full well in London, there was a massive demand for film studio. I started thinking, right, how do I facilitate the opportunity of a new film studio in the borough with the support of film LBBD? At which end, whilst we were, if I'm being honest, getting rid of lollipop personnel, a very difficult thing for the community to handle and for us to lead through. At the same time, I was buying land for a potential film studio. Now, if you're in local government and you're playing it safe, you'd have just done the one thing, which was get rid of the staff. You certainly wouldn't have looked at trying to buy land for a film studio that had no, by the way, there was no record of film in any major way in the east of London. It's all in the west of London. Luckily enough for me, though, I had a senior management team, including the chief finance officer, who understood the vision. And again, the vision coming from the community. The officer lived in the borough. She believed in it. I, at the same time, was there to facilitate that vision. I felt that the vision was right because I could see what the business opportunity was. We were losing $2 billion a year on films that could be made, that should have been made, that couldn't be made because there wasn't the facilities in London. So if that gives you a scenario, and today the happy news story of that is actually for around 50 million pound of public risk investment, we've actually not only got all that money back, we've also got a company investing 350 million pound into the largest film studios in the last 25 years, Eastbrook Film Studios. And actually, they're now doing a second investment on The Wolf in Barking, which is fantastic. We know that that will annually bring in around 35 to 40 million pounds into the local economy. Now, that all started with talking to empowered residents, then looking how we could facilitate, obviously looking at the market, looking how we could facilitate it, doing what we felt was right, even though there was risk there, which wouldn't be something you would normally find in local government.
How can finance professionals best add value to a council leader? What role do you think they should be taking in decision making?
The job of a politician is to make the policy. The job of an officer is to feed into making that policy and then carry out the policy that's been made. The chief financial officer's job is to make sure that the council is always solvent, is always, you know, within its parameters. Now, obviously, I'm going to generalize here and apologize to any of your listeners. But, you know, I find people that are in accounting, by and large, err on the side of caution more than most. That doesn't mean they all do, but I'm pleased they do because it keeps us solvent, which is important. But it's how do they get that balance, as I said before, about stability and solvency with entrepreneurial and risk. It's a very tricky balance to have, but a balance that's needed. And that's what I really appreciate the most in a chief finance officer, them being able to get that balance of understanding and obviously let the politicians like myself know the risks that we're taking on.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. I think that was all really informative and I'm sure very interesting to all of our listeners. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time. And it was a pleasure. And if anyone was ever interested in seeing what we're doing in B&D, please let us know and we'll happily show you how our governance works with our entrepreneurialism, which ultimately empowers our residents.
You're listening to CIFPA Speaks, and that was Councillor Rodwell sharing his perspective on what local leaders expect from CFOs. For the final segment of today's Student Takeover, we'll hear from CIFPA Student Communications Officer Lauren Goff, who met with Director Suki Binjal from the London Borough of Lewisham to discuss the role of finance in running a local authority and the qualities of a good CFO.
Hi, I'm Lauren Goff, CIFPA Student Communications Officer, and I'm joined by Suki Binjal, Director of Law, Corporate Governance and Elections at the London Borough of Lewisham. Thank you for joining us today. Do you want to introduce yourself, your role, and a bit about your professional background?
Hi, Lauren. Thank you for that. Yes, as Lauren says, I'm currently the Director of Law and Corporate Governance, but I'm also the Designated Monitoring Officer with London Borough of Lewisham. I'm an experienced public sector solicitor with over 25 years experience providing legal and strategic advice to local authorities and other public sector bodies as well. I have also the experience of developing systems of ethical and good governance and establishing alternative service delivery models. I'm also a consultant with Belvedere Legal. My previous roles have included a directorship with the Commission of Racial Equality. I was also a founder of a women's refuge and chaired the Equalities Board for Portsmouth City Council. I have held other various non-executive roles as well. I'm an external advisor to the committee with the Solicitors Regulation Authority. I'm also a past president of Lawyers in Local Government, which is a national body representing all solicitors, paralegals, legal execs in England, Scotland and Wales. I currently speak at events, training sessions, and I am really focused to champion the role of lawyers in public sector. I want to promote positive engagement across all local authorities, particularly when it comes to governance and leadership. I currently chair the Fighting Fraud and Corruption Locally, which is an initiative sponsored by the LGA. I am passionate about delivering excellent public services and I'm motivated to achieve results by being transparent and inclusive. I do value social responsibility and accountability to the public purse.
Wow, that's very impressive and very interesting and great to kind of have you now speaking with all that experience and the position you currently hold. So as a monitoring officer, what level of importance do you ascribe to the role of finance in the running of local authority?
Lauren, it's extremely important and crucial to have finance officers, particularly the Section 151 officer, well positioned in local authorities to have an oversight of all local authorities' activities, functions we deliver, and particularly in the decision making processes. I think given the fact that we recent challenges that most local authorities have had with balancing their budgets, I think the time is even more crucial now to have a good finance 151 director sitting side by side with the chief executive, who generally is the head of paid service, and the council's legal officer, who generally is the monitoring officer, and to make those crucial, challenging decisions along with leaders and politicians in their organisations.
And what do you want to see from a great chief finance officer, Section 151, especially in that leadership role taking those decisions? And how can they help you best in your role?
as I said, you know, we're going through a very challenging time. And what I really have valued and seen some good 151 and finance officers and colleagues is for them to have the ability to be strategic, to actually understand the corporate vision and to be able to wrap around sustainable financial outcomes to be able to deliver those corporate objectives set by the politicians. I think it's really important also for a 151 or any finance officer starting out in local government to be really creative, to actually not just says the computer says no, or, you know, the answer is no, we haven't got the money, grappling over, you know, the finite funds that are diminishing all the time. I think it's really important to have that creativity to take risks, but measured risks. We know following certain local authorities, as I said, haven't been able to manage their, balance their budget, but also haven't been able to deliver the ambitious commercial strategies that they had in place. I think, yes, let's not be nervous about those. They haven't delivered. They've shared services, their objectives haven't worked out. But that's not to say that in some organisations it won't work with the right people at the top actually leading that and ensuring that the right frameworks for financial frameworks and governance frameworks are in place for us to be able to take those risks and really understand what we mean by risk. I sometimes think that what we do is that we say, oh, here's a risk framework, and everybody's supposed to understand, you know, what is high, medium, low. But actually, it's the role of a good finance officer and a good legal officer to actually cascade what we mean by a risk appetite in local authority, particularly, as I said, given the challenging times that are ahead of us. Although we've been through, you know, an unprecedented challenging time, nobody would have thought, you know, that we were going to be in a pandemic for, you know, and we're still in it, you know, and it's really going to take its toll on public sector because our funds will be cut. So I'm looking for someone that is continuing to be creative and work side by side at the officers, not against the officers, in the sense what I'm saying is that, you know, sometimes you come to a decision-making port and finance after a while kind of go, oh, you can't go in this direction because we don't have the money. I think having finance at the top table and at early decision-making, any kind of decision-making, is really important. And I have found that when finance and legal colleagues have worked together, we do actually achieve some good results for the organisation. And I also think what's really crucial and what I've seen from a great CFO is someone that's supportive of the ethical framework, someone that's really supportive of understanding that having good ethical frameworks, good governance and robust systems isn't just the legal team or left to someone else. It actually is a collective joint responsibility in the organisation. And I think going forward, that is what we would be looking for from a good CFO. And the other thing I think is for someone to make decisions swiftly and in an agile way and not have too much red tape and not have unnecessary burdensome and cumbersome decision-making processes in order to make those quick decisions. You know, of course, have the correct financial frameworks and strategies in place, but make sure that they are fit for purpose and agile and you're continuing reviewing them. And I have found that good CFOs do that.
When you were speaking then, you were mentioning, you know, having a key top table with your 151, your chief exec, and the monitoring officer. And so much of what you've said to deliver is rooted in good relationships. Do you have any advice to finance professionals on building those relationships with their colleagues in legal services?
Absolutely. You know, again, what I found is that rather than working in silo functions, is actually the professionals and also other colleagues, you know, that are, you know, that are frontline services, it's that we all work collaboratively. We have that one council approach. We're all public servants at the end of the day. What are we trying to deliver is the best outcomes for the residents of the boroughs we work for, including other stakeholders such as health and the voluntary sector as well. We've seen how much they have been able to help us drive some of the positive opportunities that we've had during the pandemic, deliver some of the goods and services, the grants that we've been given. You know, they've been working together. And I just think that having someone that understands their communities and their residents, as well as the organisation, is really crucial. given this time. I've generally found that lawyers and accountants that are perhaps, they have the softer skill of being able to think in that way and actually develop those relationships, do go further than perhaps the ones that stick to their technical training path. And I think if you do want to go further in local government, in any public sector body, actually, I really think you've got to have those 21st century soft skills as well and be able to think beyond 3 to 5 years, longer term. You know, sustainable models is what we're looking for in finance and in legal. And I have found that when legal and finance work together, we have had some really good results.
That's very insightful as a finance professional to hear, so thank you. You've mentioned the softer skills, finance officers being creative and the ability to be strategic. What else do you think are the most helpful and maybe the least helpful traits for a finance professional? And thinking maybe beyond the CFO, but all finance professionals, whatever stage of their career they're in.
So, Lauren, I think it's like with anybody that's a professional, you know, we train to be lawyers, we train to be accountants, we train to be planners, we train to be social workers, we train and then that is what we know and we stick to the what we know. And sometimes it's very frustrating when you are trying to deliver an outcome that is a positive outcome and you're against this, like, sorry, we don't have the money, or that's not in the strategy, or that's not in your budget, and we're grappling between these budgets and we're fighting. I want someone to say, like I want my lawyers to say, ah, we don't have the money in this, but we do perhaps have some funding somewhere else, and find a solution. And what I have found over the years is that the ones that find us a solution, whether they're lawyers or accountants, are the ones that we are craving after and are the ones I think that will go far, rather than just saying, no, your structure, Suki, by the way, doesn't meet this. You've got to meet your redundancies out of this. You've got to do this. I'm looking for them to sit side by side and say, actually, if we perhaps do it this way and maybe have a medium term financial strategy that is 3 to 5 years, and then we can actually, rather than the in-year side, you know, the salami slicing approach to budgets, I think works much better. And that's what I would like to see finance officers do more of. And I don't want them to be my bookkeeper. I don't want them to be someone that just monitors my budget and every month sends me this spreadsheet and says, oh, by the way, your salaries cost has gone up here and your services cost has gone there, or you've overspent here. I want them to say, ah, we understand the pressures that you're under this month because you've gone through a restructure and people will be leaving and going, and you may need short-term capacity to help to deliver the services as you're going through this change process. We understand the cost of change, but the cost of change isn't just the money side of things. The cost of change is the organisational design, the culture, the efficiencies that we're trying to achieve. It's not all about the money. And I say the same to my lawyers. It's not just all about the law. And so what I have found is they're the ones that I do kind of struggle with, the ones that say, this is money only, and we're only thinking about money, and they're overly bureaucratic, and there's a system for a system. Unnecessary systems, robust monitoring is fantastic. That's what we need. That's what stops us from going under. It's part of the whole corporate governance jigsaw, you know, having the right checks and measures, but having them overly complicated and just for the sake of it, I think, you know, it is not a good trait for a finance officer and also for legal officers as well.
So building on that, you've mentioned some of the better traits that you would like finance professionals to have as being someone who can help you find solutions and is forward thinking. What are the other ways that a finance professional can add value to you as a monitoring officer?
Good relationships I've had with 151s. We have regular catch-ups. We build that relationship that you talked about, Lauren. That's the one I start with. Recently at Lewisham, you know, the top table, I knew, the 151s knew. And actually, we've already kind of developed a way of engaging with each other, keeping each other informed of what's happening. Your students, no doubt, at some point will hear of the Golden Triangle, which is a sit for and solace suggestion, whereby the 151, the head of paid service, and the monitoring officer, there are other statutory officers, but this Golden Triangle statutory roles, they have oversight of the whole activities of the local authority, and they have that interface with the top tier of politicians when it comes to making decisions. So you can be at that first stage of decision making, and you can advise, and you can actually be that person that steers the politicians or the organisation in the right direction to ensure they make lawful decisions. And I found that having those communications really, really helpful. I've, you know, invited the 151 to my meetings regularly with the chief whip, with the party chairman, because I think it's really important for 151 to understand what is happening politically and to be politically aware. And that shouldn't just sit on the shoulders of the monitoring officer. So it's that collective accountability, and understand corporate governance doesn't just belong to me as the monitoring officer. It belongs to everybody. And I've been looking for my 151 to support me in that. And actually, over the years, they really have done. And we've able to have really good conversations, and also steer off things where we both have gone, that's travelling in the wrong direction. And, you know, we've both jointly have put up a reasoned position to say it's not just about the money, it's about the lawfulness as well. You know, so that I think really complements, because otherwise the monitoring officer are on their own going, I'm safeguarding the law and making sure there's no maladministration or decisions are lawful. And the 151 officers on their own going, I'm safeguarding, you know, the golden pot or the public interest and making sure the fiduciary duties are up there and we have a balanced budget. And if they're two separate things, they really don't work for the right outcomes. So regular meetings, making sure you're not working in silo, open communication, have somebody that you know, that is trustworthy, you know, that you actually build that trust, that relationship. And I also think having two people, that the 151 and the MO, that are pragmatic really does give you some good results. We will know together when to take a risk, when not to, when to let something go, when not to. If it ever came to that position of issuing a Section 5 notice or a 114 notice, you don't do it on your own, you do it together. Yeah, and you're aware of everything that's happening. So it's not a lonely place, because it can be sometimes up there. And I think what people have to remember is when you hold these statutory roles, you are personally liable. It's not the organisation. There are safeguards for those roles, but you are personally liable. And that's why I think it's really crucial that you understand the roles. And that's why I'm passionate about the public interest, because that's what I uphold. So we've complemented each other rather than being against each other. I've often laughed with some previous 151s. I've said, it's all very well you saying you've got all the money, but if you haven't got the legal power, you can't do it. And vice versa, you know, it's all very well so you're saying you've got the legal power, but if you haven't got the money, you can't do it.
And that's just highlighting why it's such a mutually beneficial relationship to be cultivating. With wider colleagues, or particularly like finance and governance colleagues, much as we can aid yourselves, we gain a lot of value from speaking with you. So thank you very much. Thank you, Suki, for joining us today. Thank you to NVIDIA listening, and we hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you, everyone.
You've been listening to SIPFA Speaks. Thanks again to Suki for joining us. That wraps up today's student takeover episode. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you again next time.